Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Midland Reporter Telegram, Friday, February 3, 2023, Volume 94, Number 236, read by Leah. Midland Police Department, ID efforts for unattended juvenile continue, by Mercedes Cordero. The search for the family of an unattended juvenile found Sunday in central Midland continues. The Midland Police Department held a press conference Thursday to share information regarding its efforts to find the juvenile's family. The juvenile, believed to be 13 to 17 years old, was found Sunday at about 2:10 p.m. at the intersection of Ward Street and Shandon Avenue after MPD officers were dispatched in reference to a check person request. Officers located the juvenile walking alone in the alley. The juvenile, who is nonverbal, has provided detectives with the name Cordarius several times during their interviews. MPD detectives and crime scene unit on Tuesday collected DNA and fingerprints from the juvenile. Detectives are asking residents around the area of Ward Street and Shandon Avenue and surrounding streets to check for any camera footage that shows the juvenile in an effort to put together an idea of other areas he may have traveled in. Videos can be sent to jalonzo@midlandtexas.gov. Here is more to know about the effort to find the family of the unattended juvenile found Sunday afternoon in central Midland. What are some of the challenges this case has presented with the child being nonverbal? Answer: because he is nonverbal, he can't communicate with us. He can't tell us what he is feeling, where he is from, where he came from, or who he was living with. Question: have there been other ways of trying to communicate with him through certain devices that nonverbal, typically autistic people use? Answer: in reference to that, I cannot comment on that. Question: is there a connection to a missing boy from Collier County in Florida? Answer: at this time, due to the physical characteristics of the child, we have compared to the physical characteristics that the child has in Florida, we do not believe it will be the same child. However, we have obtained a DNA sample from the child here and will compare it to the missing child from Florida. Question: how long will that DNA sample take to get back? Answer: typically it can take several weeks. We send out samples to Dallas because they are snowed in and because there is no one in the office at this time. We cannot even request it to be expedited or get an estimated time of how long it will take. Question: have you been in contact with the sheriff in Florida? Yes, I have, and we are both sharing information. Question: have you cross-referenced with the school districts to see if it matched the name he provided? Answer: we have looked into different systems where we have NAMIS and NCMEC, and we used the name he provided to us, and I have not been able to match a child or a missing person that matches his description. Question: how is his current health? Answer: as of right now, he is healthy and warm and fed and happy, as far as I know. Question: at this point in your investigation, is there a part of this investigation that's leaning more toward that he is from Midland or may be from out of state? Answer: we have no idea where he is from. Question: a lot of people have been wondering if he was found with the helmet from the picture or if those were given to him by officers. Answer: he was found with those items. We think he picked them up along the way. Question: is there any kind of criminal investigation pending, looking into the person originally caring for him? Answer. I believe if we can figure out who was in original care, we can file if they broke the law. Question. What kind of charges are you looking at? Answer. We can look at the charge of injury to a child for just not providing his basic needs and allowing him to wander the street. You can also look at endangering a child because he has been out on his own for so long and no one has called and said, hey, this is my son. I don't know where he's been. Question. Do you have a timeline of how long he has been on his own? Answer. No, we don't. Question. If he is not able to be identified, what would come next? Answer. Right now, he is in state custody, and if they couldn't find his family, then he would be in permanent state custody. Question. Has the department considered the fact that his parents have passed away? Answer. We have considered all avenues in this case. Question. MPD has worked extremely well with the media in trying to further spread this information. What is your hope that this information gets out as widely as possible? Answer. I hope it gets widely as possible that we can possibly find a cousin, an aunt, a sibling, a step-sibling, a mom, or even a neighbor that can come forward and say, hey, I think this child is this child, and this is why. And everyone that calls in tips and says those things, that information is forwarded to the correct department so it can be pushed out and they can go check on these things. Abbott touts Odessa workforce training by Ben Schaefer. Governor Greg Abbott toured and held a press conference Thursday at an Odessa College welding lab where he discussed the future of Texas workforce. Abbott toured the college welding lab and held a round table with a panel that included State Senator Kevin Sparks, State Rep Brooks Landgraf, Republican Odessa, Odessa College leaders, alumni, and students to discuss how Texas is committed to providing workforce training opportunities to keep up with rapidly growing business and population growth statewide. The Republican governor said that during this legislative session, state government will do more to develop Texas's workforce and that workforce development is one of the state's greatest needs. The state is growing so prolifically, Abbott said. We have probably the fastest growing economy in America. The Texas economy is now a $2 trillion a year economy. He added that there are more Fortune 500 companies headquartered in Texas than in any other state. Abbott also said Texas will remain a leading economy if it can develop workforce. The governor said workforce training statewide can create high-paying jobs for all Texans following their completion. Abbott gave an example of a Houston woman who was homeless before joining an engineering training program, and following her graduation, she found a job, and as Abbott said, makes more money than the governor of Texas. He said, a major focus of this state legislative session is workforce training opportunities and making them available for more Texans, as the benefits are shared by individuals and corporations that call Texas home. Abbott on icy conditions across Texas. Although the press conference was to be focused on the state's workforce, Abbott discussed winter weather conditions that began early this week. Abbott said that in Texas, in Austin, and some central Texas cities, the icy conditions have knocked down trees and tree limbs, which have fallen onto power lines, causing power outages for some. He also said he's been in contact with ERCOT since days before the storm. The power grid hasn't failed at all, Abbott said. It has maintained a surplus of between 5,000 and 10,000 megawatts of surplus power. Small Bites Part 1. Menus, Activities Perfect for Valentine's Day by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Cafe at the Gardens, 3300 North Fairgrounds Road, The local green space will offer a set appetizer, salad, and dessert, along with three entree options. Guests can expect 6-button mushrooms stuffed with crab and topped with mozzarella, a strawberry spinach salad with candied pecans, feta, and a raspberry vinaigrette, either filet mignon with mashed potatoes and bacon-wrapped asparagus, salmon Oscar with Parmesan risotto and heirloom tomatoes, or Madeira chicken with herb-roasted potatoes and steamed broccoli, and New York cheesecake for dessert. Make reservations by calling 432-687-1478. Eccentric Brewing Company, 1402 Cotton Flat Road. If you plan on sweeping your Valentine off their feet with a home-cooked meal, let Eccentric take care of the desserts and drinks. The brewery will hold chocolate and beer, a guided pairing of 5 Marabia craft chocolates with a flight of 5 Eccentric's brews. Furthermore, Tasty Bones food truck will be on site with a special Valentine's Day themed menu. Raspberry Stout will hit the taps once again, and live music will bring the tunes. Doors open at 6 p.m., tasting starts at 7 p.m., open to the public at 8 p.m. Reservations for the $40 ticketed event required. 432-934-1055. Garlic Press, 2200 West Wadley Avenue, Suite 6. Although your official Valentine's Day menu is still awaiting the finishing touches, be ready to have your taste buds melted from delicious and delicate flavors. Reserve a seat by calling 432-570-4020. Papa John's, 4408 West Loop 250. Feel like keeping it casual this year? No worries. Available with any toppings and sauce specifications, the chain is bringing back its fan favorite, heart-shaped pizza. You can pre-order now or wait until Cupid shoots his arrows. Prices vary based on toppings, add-ons. www.papajohns.com or 432-694-7272. Ranchland Hills, 1600 East Wadley Avenue. With a $55 pre-fig menu, the Country Club offers a 4-course meal for patrons. To start the evening, a mini charcuterie board filled with meats, cheeses, and salmon cucumber crunch pinwheels. Next, a choice between a sweetheart salad, arugula, candied walnuts, goat cheese, red wine vinaigrette, or a Caesar, romaine hearts, creamy dressing, homemade croutons, Parmesan chips. For the main course, select either the grilled Atlantic salmon and black garlic seared shrimp or the mesquite smoked beef tenderloin. Both come with an array of sides, such as potatoes, veggies, and more. Finish the evening with either a flourless chocolate cake and or chocolate mousse or a slice of New York cheesecake and berries. Seating will be at 6 p.m. and 7:45 p.m. Reserve your spot by calling 432-683-2041, extension 4. Tall City Brewing Company, 3303 West Golf Course Road. Back again, Tall City Brewing will host its annual Valentine's Day Bingo. Food trucks will be on site along with 21 and up only prizes. The guessing starts at 6 p.m. Sip House, 303 West Wall Street. 6 events make up the Cocktail Lounge's Sip and the City month-long event. Yet, for Valentine's Day, the crew is going all out. Red and pink heart-shaped decor line the entire intimate bar, along with balloons and streamers hanging from the ceiling. For cocktails, the Libation Visionaries created 8 drinks. Sip in the City, vodka, lemon, grenadine, egg white foam, $14. Carrie's Cosmo, Vodka, orange liqueur, cranberry, lemon, $12. Mr. Big, smoked bourbon, chocolate bitters, Luxardo syrup, $18. Head over heels, rum, strawberry, lime, and mint, $12. Stupid Cupid, tequila, lime, raspberry, and jalapeno, $10. The Morning After, gin, creme de voilette, egg white foam, $14. Shot Through Your Heart, vanilla vodka, watermelon liqueur, lemon, $8. Reservations not required, but recommended. How Many Straight Hours Below Freezing in Midland? By Stuart Doreen. The sun came out Thursday, helping to push the temperature above freezing and continue the thaw after more than 3 full days of freezing temperatures at Midland International Airport. Officially, the National Weather Service reported 85 straight hours of temperatures below freezing. That streak went from 8 p.m. Sunday to 9 a.m. Thursday. To put into context how long that streak was, the record streak in February 2021 was 221 hours. The following is a look at the wintry weather that plagued the region by the numbers. Number of straight hours below freezing, 85. Amount of rain at Midland International Airport, 0.06 of an inch. Lowest temperature, 20 degrees on January 30 and 31. Lowest wind chill, 7 degrees on January 30 and 5 degrees on January 31. Warmest high from January 30 to February 1, 30 degrees. Number of days school was called off, 3. Source, National Weather Service. Charlie and the Chocolate Factory opens Friday at MCT. By Morgan Taylor Thomas. A candy lover's dream, Charlie in the Chocolate Factory tells the classic tale of level-headed family kid Charlie Bucket, gluttonous chocolate eater Augustus Gloop, spoiled daddy's girl Veruca Salt, arrogant gum chewer, violent bureau guard, and ill-tempered video gamer Mike TV. As they travel through Willy Wonka's Oompa Loompa Haven factory. Between 3-course flavored chewers and chocolate rivers, the excitement never stops as each child faces temptations geared toward their specific flaws, challenging them with the choice between immediate and delayed satisfaction. However, there's more to the story than meets the eye. There's a lot of focus on the kids, but part of the story is the parents and Willy Wonka. Robert Reed, who will play Willy Wonka in the MCT production, said, "Parents, teach your kids not to be ornery, selfish, and impatient, but to enjoy life and adventure." Nevertheless, fun reigns supreme throughout the musical. For Daryl Barry, who will play Grandpa Joe, channeling a grandfather's compassion comes easy, even if the 90-year-old character still has quite a few years on him, making the similarities easy for the actor to spot. "I don't have any grandchildren, but I do have 5 children, and I'm a children's pastor, so I really enjoy relating with kids and being there for them," Barry said. "I've been able to relax into my old age, and it's fun playing an old jolly man with tons of stories." The show will open at 7:30 p.m. Friday night in Davis Theater 1. Tickets can be bought at www.mctmidland.org. Obituaries and Death Notices. Connie DeMasi, beloved wife, companion, mother, grandmother, snappy dresser, and accomplished traveler, died peacefully at home on December 20, 2022. She was happily married to Frank for 57 years until he passed in 2003. They had 2 girls, Lisa and Paula. She has two lovely granddaughters, Emily and Olivia, and a son-in-law, Dale, all of whom she loved tremendously. She loved and stayed in touch with family members in the U.S. and in Italy. We would like to thank the people who loved and supported Connie on this journey. Ashley, her beloved angel, the Gentiva Hospice, especially Lori and Tammy, her nurse, and Connie's close friend, Julia, and Don Eckerty. Douglas Lee Boone. Douglas Lee Boone left this world to join his parents and older brother in heaven on Wednesday, 2/1/23. Visitation will be from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Friday, February 3, 2023, at American Heritage Funeral Home. Funeral services will be at 10 a.m. Saturday, February 4, at American Heritage Funeral Home. Interment will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Douglas was preceded in death by his parents and older brother, Don Boone. He will be greatly missed by his wife of 61 years, Winnie Boone of Midland, and his son Gary Boone of Midland, his daughter and her husband, Michelle and Matt Maurer of Midland, and his grandchildren, William and Chelsea Chappelle, his sister and her husband, Cherie and Carol Holtzclaw of Midland, his nephew, Lance Boone, and children Walker and Maggie of Conroe, Texas. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Funeral Home, 4100 North FM 1788 in Midland. Michael Rabone Glenn. Michael Rabone Glenn, 73, passed away January 29, 2023. Michael was born in 1949 in Clanton, Alabama. He worked for the U.S. Postal Service for 35 years. He was a diehard Alabama Crimson Tide fan and an avid collector of Coca-Cola memorabilia. He moved to Midland, Texas in 1986. Michael was preceded in death by his parents, Gaines and Gladys Glenn of Birmingham, Alabama. Michael is survived by his devoted wife, Janice, his two children, Ryan and Sarah, and his brother, Isaac Glenn, and his wife, Beverly. He is also survived by a loving extended family of numerous cousins, nieces, and nephews. Celebration of life will be held at 2 p.m. Wednesday, February 8, 2023, at Bellevue Baptist Church in Midland. The family would like to extend a special thank you to the nurses in the CCU at Midland Memorial Hospital and to the Shepherd and Ferguson families. Thank you to everyone for all your continued love and support during this time. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelsh.com. Patricia Browning. Patricia Browning, daughter of Isora Browning of Amarillo, passed away February 2, 2023. There will be no service. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelsh.com. James Pierce. James Pierce of Odessa died on January 30, 2023, in Midland, Texas. A funeral service will be held on Friday, February 3, 2023, at 2 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home, immediately followed by burial at American Heritage Cemetery. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory in Midland.
This is Reed, and this is the Odessa American for Friday, February 3rd, 2023. 41-year-old murder conviction could get second look. The Innocence Project of Texas has filed a lawsuit to overturn the conviction of a 66-year-old New Mexico man who was convicted of murdering a Denver City priest in an Odessa motel room in December 1981. The Innocence Project said in a news release, the Odessa Police Department recently ran fingerprints found at the crime scene and inside the Reverend Patrick Ryan's stolen car and wallet and identified them as belonging to people with criminal histories who were staying at the Sand and Sage Motel at the time of the murder. Those individuals are now deceased. 70th Ector County District Court Judge Dan Whalen must now decide whether to hold a hearing on the new evidence. James Harry Reyes of Chama, New Mexico, was convicted by an Ector County jury of murdering Ryan, 49, and he was sentenced to 38 years in prison in June 1983. He was paroled in 2003 but ended up back in prison after being convicted of the misdemeanor crime of failure to ID. He was paroled for the last time in 2012. Reyes, then 26, was indicted for the murder after confessing to Albuquerque police 11 months after the slaying, but he quickly recanted his confession. In the years since his conviction, multiple attorneys and investigative journalists have expressed their belief in Reyes's innocence, and a, quote, "the case of James Harry Reyes, a wrongful conviction revealed," end quote, was published in December 2017. Reyes himself sent numerous letters to the Odessa American, also proclaiming his innocence over the years. According to news accounts, Reyes has time-stamped receipts, a traffic ticket, and an eyewitness who place him in Roswell, New Mexico, at the time of the slaying, and there was no physical evidence linking him to the gruesome murder. According to the Innocence Project, the Ector County District Attorney's Office, the New Mexico Legislature, members of the Texas Legislature, and the local Catholic diocese all share their belief that Mr. Reyes was wrongfully convicted. However, everyone thought all of the evidence had been destroyed, so there was no legal path to prove his innocence. OPD recently found the fingerprints, though, and ran them through the National Fingerprint Database. Quote, "the analysis revealed the identities of Father Ryan's killers," end quote, the Innocence Project wrote in its news release. Quote, "IPTX applauds and deeply appreciates the assistance and cooperation of the Ector County District Attorney's Office and OPD. Their integrity, professionalism, and transparency in this case has set the bar for law enforcement agencies throughout the state of Texas," end quote, said Reyes's attorney, Allison Clayton, deputy director of IPTX and director of the Innocence Clinic at Texas Tech School of Law. Ector County District Attorney Dusty Gallivan declined to comment Thursday, and attempts to reach OPD Chief Mike Girk weren't immediately successful. Reyes had told various news sources he met Ryan, a native of Ireland, while hitchhiking from Lubbock to Hobbs, New Mexico. They shared some drinks, and several days later, the two of them met up again in Denver City. Reyes has said the two men were sharing drinks in the rectory at St. William's Church when Ryan grabbed him by the shirt collar and demanded oral sex, and he complied. Reyes said the last time he saw Ryan was when Ryan dropped him off in Roswell, and Ryan was in the company of another hitchhiker. Ryan's bloodied, bound, and battered body was found the next day. Reyes has said he confessed to killing Ryan after getting drunk and taking drugs because he felt guilty about the sex. 8 years after his conviction, then Andrews County District Attorney Dennis Cadra reviewed the trial record and decided Reyes was innocent. He said Reyes would have had to drive 120 miles an hour to get from Roswell to Odessa and back again in order to commit the murder during the right time frame. Cadra sent a letter to then-Governor Ann Richards in 1992 asking for him to be pardoned and released. Reyes and his supporters also approached the Texas Board of Pardons and Paroles and former Governor Rick Perry, asking them to grant a, quote, "pardon for innocence," end quote, which would expunge his record, restore his civil rights, and finally declare that he was not responsible for the murder. Celebrating good deeds. Dury honored as Citizen of the Year. Odessan David Dury has dedicated his service to the Odessa community through business and volunteerism for decades. On Thursday, the longtime resident was honored by the Odessa Chamber of Commerce as the Citizen of the Year in a ceremony that took place at the Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. Quote, "it's such a surprise," end quote, Dury said of the award. Quote, "it's such an honor. It's so humbling. This room is filled with people who have volunteered to give back. They're my heroes. It's an honor to be honored this way. I'm going to try and direct that back towards the people that do so much for our community," end quote. Durie was chosen by a panel of Odessa Chamber leaders to receive the Distinguished Award. Durie was born in Crane in 1957. He graduated from Permian High School and attended Odessa College, where he received his associates before continuing to the University of Texas Permian Basin to complete his bachelor's in accounting in 1981. Quote, we have received rave reviews from people who have said that they're very happy that we're honoring David Durie, end quote. Odessa Chamber of Commerce President Renee Earle said, quote, he has many friends out there in the community. As we delve into writing his bio, there's a lot more that he's done that we aren't aware of. He's really touched many organizations throughout the year. He's very focused on education. He's been on the Education Foundation and has helped the chamber through some development projects. We're very grateful to honor him, end quote. Durie started working for Midland Memorial Hospital as their chief accountant, where he worked for a little over a year before buying into Elms Ferris in 1989. Durie continued working for Elms Ferris until the company merged with Weaver in 2010. He served as a partner at Weaver until retiring in 2022. Since retiring last year, Durie now owns Durie LP with his wife, Donna. Over the years, he has served on different committees. He is currently the treasurer for Odessans for Education, a board member of Grow Odessa, a member of the Permian Basin Rehabilitation Center Advisory Board, a member of the UTPB School of Business Advisory Committee, the UTPB President's Advisory Council, and many more positions. Quote, a good example is the Education Foundation, end quote, Durie said. Quote, people go through that. There have been a lot of good volunteers go through that. There's a lot of money raised. I was able to cross over from my professional career to helping ECISD. That's one example of a lot of people that go through the Education Foundation that really do a lot of good for the students and teachers here in the Permian Basin, end quote. He also had a lot of praise for Grow Odessa. Quote, they do a good job of working with the city and work with developers to try and bring economic development into town, end quote, Durie said. Quote, there's a lot of effort and a lot of great, smart people in that group, end quote. Chairman of the Odessa Chamber of Commerce, Grayson Hankins, talked about how Durie has been involved with the community. Quote, David is a guy that has always been around, end quote, Hankins said. Quote, he's a behind-the-scenes guy. He's been involved in a lot of organizations with the community. He's always faithful. He doesn't just serve on a committee. He shows, and I've known him for a long time. I can't think of anyone more deserving than him. All of his efforts in the past are what got him Citizen of the Year, end quote. Despite all the accolades, Durie said it wouldn't be possible without the other volunteers and organizations he's worked with. Quote, I've been here for many years, and we're fortunate here to work with different organizations, end quote, Durie said. Quote, this is a celebration of the people that I was able to work with. They're good people who have helped Odessa grow. MPD has few answers about found boy. As the days pass, more and more questions continue to arise about the boy found in Midland. The answers to those questions continue to be limited. Midland Police Department Detective Jenny Alonzo addressed members of the media about the boy found by the department's officers in an alley near Ward Street and Shandon Avenue on Sunday. Quote, I hope this gets out as widely as possible so we can maybe find a cousin, an aunt, a sibling, a step-sibling, mom, dad, grandma, grandpa, anyone who recognized him, even a neighbor or former neighbor that can come forward and say, hey, I think this child, and this is why, end quote, Alonzo said during the press conference. Alonzo said this case, which she called a, quote, rarity, end quote, is especially tricky for MPD as the boy is nonverbal. Alonzo was asked how MPD attempted to connect with him in other ways, and Alonzo said she can't comment on that specific question at this time. Quote, because he is nonverbal, he can't communicate with us, and he can't tell us what he's feeling, where he's from, where he came from, who he was living with last. We actually have no idea where he's from, end quote, Alonzo said. The press conference took place at the Midland Police Department, where Alonzo fielded an array of questions from media members. Alonzo talked about the DNA and fingerprint process to online rumors to what happens to the boy if he remains unclaimed. One of the big questions Alonzo answered is the online belief the boy found in Midland is the same missing boy from Collier County, Florida. The Florida boy went missing on January 10, 2009. Alonzo said the department doesn't believe he is that boy, and she has been in contact with authorities at the Collier County Sheriff's Office. She said the two departments are sharing information. quote, due to physical characteristics of the child that we have compared to the physical characteristics that the child has in Florida, we don't believe it's the same child, end quote, Alonzo said. Quote, however, we have obtained a DNA sample from the child here, and we are going to compare it to the missing child in Florida, end quote. In a press release issued on Tuesday evening, MPD detectives and crime scene unit collected DNA and fingerprints from him at 4 p.m. that afternoon, and he was asked to write his name. The child wrote the name, quote, Cordarius, end quote, several times. Alonzo said MPD didn't get any hits on the name, quote, Cordarius, end quote, when they searched the database with that name and the appearance of the boy. Though DNA and fingerprints were collected on Tuesday, Alonzo said those samples are set to be tested in Dallas, but the recent winter storm has caused additional delays. Quote, it typically takes several weeks, end quote, Alonzo said about obtaining DNA results. Quote, we send our DNA sample out to Dallas, and since they are currently snowed in and no one is in the office at this time, we can't even request it to be expedited to get an estimate time of how long it will take, end quote. Alonzo said there could be criminal charges filed against the parents and guardians for the boy. She explained those charges could range from injury to a child and endangering a child. Injury to a child can range from a first-degree felony to a state jail felony. Endangering a child can range from a second-degree felony to a state jail felony. The maximum penalties for a first-degree felony of injury to a child can include between 5 and 99 years or life in prison. They could also be fined up to $10,000. The maximum penalties for a second-degree felony of endangering a child can include no less than 2 years, but up to 20 years in prison and a fine that can cost up to $10,000. Alonzo said the boy is currently in Children Protective Services, and that would continue if he remains unclaimed. Quote, if we can figure out who he was in original care and we can file charges, there will be charges filed, end quote, Alonzo said. A press release issued by MPD detailed officers were dispatched on Sunday to the intersection of Ward Street and Chandon Avenue regarding a check person request. Officers saw a black male, 13 to 17 years old, walking alone in the alley. Officers attempted to collect information, but he wouldn't respond. Officers recognized he may have a mental disability and was nonverbal. Alonzo believes the pink helmet the boy was wearing was something he found while walking around. She also doesn't know how long the boy has been walking around before being picked up by MPD. Quote, we do not, end quote, Alonzo said when asked about how long the boy has been on his own. Abbott gets look at OC welding program. Governor Greg Abbott got a snapshot of the workforce development opportunities Odessa College has to offer during a visit Thursday. Abbott toured the welding lab at Sedate Hall and took part in a roundtable with students, local legislators, educators, Ray Martinez, OC President Gregory Williams, President and CEO of the Texas Association of Community Colleges, and business leaders. The roundtable was open to the media at the conclusion of the discussion. Abbott took questions afterwards. Marco Solis, who is taking welding at OC Tech's Early College High School, has an internship with downhole drilling. Quote, my OC experience has been amazing, end quote, Solis said. He praised the welding program, all his instructors, and downhole drilling executives for what he's learned and his internship. Quote, because of this internship, I'm getting more experience in the oil field, and I can put my skills to the test. All the classes they've helped me out there in the field, and I feel I did learn a lot, end quote, Solis said. Abbott said he wanted to congratulate Solis and the other students he got to meet at OC Thursday. Quote, it's really inspiring to see some of the students who are still in high school, others who are in the official program at Odessa College, who really are proud about working their way towards a good-paying job, end quote, Abbott said. Quote, let me say broadly, it's great to be back in Odessa, but really an honor to get to be here at Odessa College to learn more about what they are doing, about one of the most important issues that we're dealing with in the state of Texas, and that is to develop a high-quality workforce. I really liked the words the President Williams articulated about what their vision is. Their vision is for this college to be number one. There's a saying that you live up to your expectations, and if your expectation is to be average, you live up to that. If your expectation is to be number one, you will work to live up to that. But my observation of what I've seen today, you can tell that Odessa College is living up to his, to its expectation to be number one, end quote, Abbott said. Williams also said that OC wanted to be, quote, that experiment, end quote. Quote, I would rephrase that. That may be what you wanted to be, but you started out being that experiment, and I think you are now that role model for other colleges, whether it be in Texas or outside of Texas. What Odessa College is doing is exactly what the state of Texas is focused on, end quote, he added. Abbott noted that Representative Brooks Landgraf, Republican Odessa, and Senator Kevin Sparks, Republican Midland, who were in attendance, are leaders in the workforce area. Quote, we will not conclude the session without doing even more to develop workforce here in the great state of Texas. There's a simple reason why. Workforce development is one of the most important needs we have in the state because the state is growing so prolifically through our economy. We have probably the fastest growing economy in America. The Texas economy is now is a $2 trillion a year economy. That makes us the ninth largest economy in the entire world. Texas now has more Fortune 500 company headquarters in our state than any other state in the United States of America. In this last year, we added far more new jobs than any other state in the United States. We will remain number one so long as we continue to develop the workforce that our employers need. Odessa College, as well as other community colleges and other workforce programs, many of which are represented here today, they are providing the training and education that is needed to prepare, end quote, students for good-paying jobs, Abbott said. The students are learning the skills while they are still in high school. He noted that Ariel Aguilar Cerda, an auto diesel graduate working at Premier Truck Group, a Penske company, Odessa, told Abbott that he's happy to be able to pursue what he wanted. Quote, think about the profoundness of what he was saying. There are a lot of people who go through the education process and they have to learn whatever the college is teaching or whatever the high school is teaching, and they may or may not like what they're doing. They may not see the practical application of what they're doing. So Ariel got to do what he wanted to do. He's earning a good living doing what he enjoys, end quote, Abbott said. From the employer side, they need students who graduate with skills that can be directly applied to high-demand job areas. Abbott said he calls Texas the land of opportunity. Quote, the only way that truly is the land of opportunity is if everybody has opportunity, end quote, Abbott said. He said some choose welding as the pathway of opportunity and others find a different course. Abbott met a woman who was going through an apprentice training program at S&B Engineers and Constructors outside Houston. 4 years before, she'd been homeless. She went through the apprenticeship program, got training, and went from being homeless to a homeowner. Abbott said he asked her how much she was making, and when she told me, quote, I said, so 4 years ago you were homeless, and now you're making more than the governor of Texas. It makes me proud to see Texans succeed because of platforms that are offered up by colleges like Odessa College, end quote, he said. Asked about what vouchers would do to a program like the one with OC Tech's NOC, Abbott said education savings accounts would allow a student or the parents of a student to craft the education pathway that's best for that student. Quote, we need to understand a reality of life. When it comes to education, like everything else, one size does not fit all. There are students here at Odessa College that needed a size different than what some other students might need. We need to provide a platform for all those students, making sure that we have an education pathway that's unique for each child in the state, end quote, Abbott said. NACFI said in the short term, it doesn't look like the demand for welders will slow down. Quote, last semester and this semester, we served over 1,000 students just for welding program. We still cannot keep up with the demand, end quote, NACFI said. Quote, more than 95% of our students, they get jobs right after finishing their degree, even though they don't finish their degree, end quote, he said. Even if they haven't finished their degree, they still get jobs. Quote, I have my high school students, they are in internship programs. They're earning $20 an hour at 18 years old, plus they're taking education as well, end quote, NACFI said. Stacy Brown, president of Odessa Regional Medical Center, asked about addressing the nursing shortage. Quote, obviously one of the things that weighs heavy on our mind is the nurse shortage. We've had it for decades and it's only getting worse. We have an incredible nurse training program here at Odessa College, top notch. We have a new health science center being built here. But one of the limiting factors over the years has been faculty. So would the state be willing to fund faculty positions for some of these critical programs that we all need for healthcare? End quote, she said. Abbott said the good thing is that all the leaders at the Capitol are aware of the issue. Quote, we're looking at programs such as incentives to incentivize people to be faculty. We have incentives like that that we use for residents in medical school. And so it may just be applying that type of program to those who serve as educators in the nursing field. We know exactly what you're talking about. One thing hindering our ability to train nurses is an inadequate supply of nursing educators. We can't have more nurses without more nursing educators, end quote, Abbott said. Brown said they turn students away. Quote, it's devastating for that to happen, so we appreciate your support, end quote, she said. Abbott noted that she has Landgraf and Sparks there who will carry that message to Austin. Texas Film Commission announces new interactive exhibit. Austin. The Texas Film Commission and the Texas Archive of the Moving Image announced Thursday the launch of a new interactive exhibit, Meet Me in San Antonio, Hemisphere 68 on Film. Drawing from home movies, television news coverage, promotional films, and more, the exhibit explores the planning and execution of the 1968 San Antonio event. Hemisphere 68 was a six-month event celebrating the ethnic groups of the Western Hemisphere, as well as San Antonio's 250th birthday. The theme, quote, confluence of civilizations in the Americas, end quote, was seen through performances, demonstrations, and the architecture of Hemisphere Park, constructed specifically for the event in downtown San Antonio. Quote, the work that TAMI does to highlight Texas history through the preservation of film and media is vital, end quote, TFC Director Stephanie Whalen stated in the press release. Quote, to experience the Hemisphere 68 event and San Antonio through the home movies from those who attended is very exciting. We are proud to partner with TAMI to continue their great work preserving experiences and stories that are uniquely Texan, end quote. Quote, you can see a video of the Tower of the Americas being built in the exhibit, end quote, TAMI Managing Director Elizabeth Hansen stated in the press release. Quote, today, it's hard to imagine San Antonio without many of the iconic buildings created for the fair. Through home movies and other film documents, this exhibit lets you see how the park and downtown San Antonio came to life during this monumental event, end quote. The exhibit can be viewed online at tinyurl.com/44c49dta. Many of the archival films featured in the exhibit were digitized as a part of the Texas Film Roundup, a statewide media preservation program presented by TAMI and TFC. Since 2008, thousands of residents, businesses, and cultural institutions have participated in Film Roundup events hosted in locations across Texas. The Texas Film Roundup has resulted in the digitization of more than 50,000 films and videotapes. A curated collection of more than 5,000 videos is available to watch at texasarchive.org. The Texas Film Commission and the Governor's Economic Development and Tourism Office helps to grow local jobs and local economies by promoting the Lone Star State as the premier destination for film, television, commercial, animation, visual effects, video games, and extended reality, XR, production. More information is available at gov.texas.gov/film. The Texas Archive of the Moving Image is an independent nonprofit organization founded in 2002 to discover, preserve, make accessible, and serve community interest in Texas moving image heritage. To learn more, visit texasarchive.org. Pfluger announces inaugural student leadership conference. Washington. On Thursday, U.S. Congressman August Pfluger, Texas 11, announced the inaugural Pfluger Student Leadership Conference, which is open to all high school students in the 11th District of Texas. The conference will be held from 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. February 25th at Angelo State University in the Janelle Center, Clark VIP Room. Space is limited, and students are encouraged to register as soon as possible at tinyurl.com/dd3wbzw2. The conference will offer students the opportunity to participate in character-building activities and hear powerful messages from dynamic guest speakers while gaining critical knowledge on the fundamentals of leadership. Local News Roundup. Father arrested following stabbing. A 58-year-old Odessa man was arrested Saturday after his daughter accused him of threatening her with a box cutter and her boyfriend accused him of stabbing him with a screwdriver. According to an Odessa Police Department report, dispatchers received a 911 call about a disturbance in the 1500 block of Beverly Street around 10 p.m. Saturday. When officers arrived, Raymond Garcia's daughter, 20, and her boyfriend, 23, told them Garcia had gotten drunk and was arguing with everyone in the house. The pair told officers Garcia grabbed a box cutter and held it to his daughter's stomach, saying he was going to slice her and someone whose name was redacted from the report into pieces, the report stated. The couple said when Garcia became aware officers were on their way, Garcia stabbed the boyfriend with a nearby screwdriver because he had tried to block his exit. Garcia's wife told officers she left the house and called 911 after Garcia threatened the young woman with the box cutter. She also said she heard the younger man yell he'd been stabbed while on the phone, the report stated. Garcia was arrested on suspicion of two counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a second-degree felony punishable by 2 to 20 years in prison. He was also arrested on suspicion of public intoxication as officers found him in the alley behind the house. Garcia remained in the Ector County Jail Thursday on surety bonds totaling $100,000. Gray trial postponed, status conference scheduled for March. The Wisconsin trial of Casey Gray, a former Texas House of Representatives candidate, was postponed. Gray, who was accused of violating restraining orders, convinced Judge David Reddy of Walworth County Circuit Court to postpone his January 23rd trial, stating he needed time to obtain a new attorney. Online court records show Gray hired his latest attorney January 27th, and a status conference has been scheduled for March 8th. Court records show Gray has been represented by three attorneys since the case was filed in April 2018, and all have withdrawn. The last one withdrew in January 2021. Gray lost against State Representative Brooks Landgraf in a highly contentious battle in March. He is facing one count of a violate/harassment restraining order in a case filed in April 2018, and he's facing two counts in a case that was filed 1 month later. The charges are misdemeanors. A warrant was issued for Gray in November when he failed to appear in court. Gray emailed the judge to say he was serving in the army in Ukraine and, quote, due to Russian missile attacks on the infrastructure, I was unable to travel or have power to make a call to the court, end quote. Court records from January 18th indicate Gray told the judge he lives in Glendale, Wisconsin. His Facebook account still indicates he lives in Odessa. Andrews man accused of crashing car. A 41-year-old Andrews man was arrested last week after authorities said he crashed his Cadillac CTS into a home in the 1400 block of Rosewood Avenue. According to an Odessa Police Department report, someone called 911 shortly after midnight, January 28th, to report a car had crashed into a house, and when officers arrived, they saw the Cadillac had damaged a wall on the northeast side of the home and the front door. A woman at the scene told officers her boyfriend, Arnold Benavides, was driving the car and they'd just left Club La Playa on East 8th Street. She further said Benavides took off on foot following the crash, leaving her behind with a hurt knee, the report stated. An officer indicated in his report that officers found Benavides with red, bloodshot, quote, glossy, end quote, eyes, and that he was slurring his words when speaking. Benavides, who hurt his ankle in the crash, was taken to Medical Center Hospital, where he failed the horizontal nystagmus test, the report stated. Benavides declined to submit his blood for testing and was not asked to do any other field sobriety test due to his injury. Benavides was arrested on suspicion of driving while intoxicated and accident involving injury. He was released from the Ector County Jail later the same day after posting surety bonds totaling $51,500. One in man arrested by OPD. According to the Odessa Police Department, a 30-year-old wanted man made things worse for himself when he tried to avoid being arrested on his outstanding warrants. An OPD officer was looking for a felony fugitive in the 8500 block of West Dunn on Sunday when he saw a man leaving the property on a motorcycle that didn't have a license plate. The officer saw the motorcyclist blow through the stop sign at North Harolds Avenue and West 10th Street and pulled him over. The motorcyclist, who was identified as Jake Michael Jones, physically resisted when the officer tried to frisk him for weapons, pushed the officer, and ran away, according to the report. Jones was caught and booked in the Ector County Jail on suspicion of evading arrest and resisting arrest. He was also arrested on outstanding warrants in 2 drug cases and 3 traffic cases. Jones remains in custody on surety bonds totaling $15,000. Three arrested following traffic stop. A trio of Odessans are facing drug charges after officers said they found marijuana and methamphetamine after a traffic stop. According to an Odessa Police Department report, an officer pulled over a Mercury Grand Marquis in the 2400 block of East 8th Street around 3 a.m. Monday because one of its brake lights was white instead of red. After an officer saw a clear glass pipe in the car, officers began to search it and the three occupants, the report stated. The officers found more than 18 grams of methamphetamine and 1.71 grams of marijuana, plus a Smith & Wesson revolver and a digital scale. David Charles Cody Feehan, 30, was arrested on suspicion of manufacture and delivery of a controlled substance, 4 grams to 200 grams, a first-degree felony, possession of marijuana, and unlawful carry of a firearm. He remained in the Ector County Jail Thursday on surety bonds totaling $62,500. Darrell Bo Turner, 43, was arrested on suspicion of possession of a controlled substance, a third-degree felony, and a possession of marijuana. He was also arrested on an outstanding warrant in a family violence assault case. He remains in custody on surety bonds, totaling $14,500. Angelica Maria Reyes Lopez, 43, was arrested on suspicion of possession of a controlled substance, a third-degree felony, and possession of marijuana. When jail officials found 0.70 grams of methamphetamine in Lopez's boot, she was also arrested on suspicion of prohibited substance in a correctional facility, which is also a third-degree felony. She remains in custody on surety bonds totaling $12,500.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.